Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 9:30 in 716.
Fact or fiction in the media?
Obviously, we've seen a blurring of facts and opinions.
Because that's become the standard. The opinion journalism, which Fox has done very successfully, everyone else has copied. Monkey see, monkey do. So that's the problem. It's all become opinion journalism, not just hard news the way it's supposed to be.
This one is pretty close to my heart. I'm Tim Wenger on 930 in 716, powered by the Brothers of Mercy, a 5-star rated skilled nursing residence offering affordable living in a country setting. So the Pew Research Center has completed a survey based on a quiz that shines a spotlight on the seemingly difficult time we as American media consumers are having on establishing the distinction between opinion and fact in the media, in news. You can read the whole study, the questionnaire, all of it at WBEN.com. But the bottom line is the chances of us figuring out what's truth versus what's opinion is about the same as a random guess. It frustrates me, for sure. We move so quickly in life these days. We consume media in a flash, out of context. And because we hear it, we assume there may be, well, some credibility. But what fascinates me is that oftentimes when I challenge someone who says they heard media bias in the news, they heard it from the likes of a talk show host, a commentator, not a news person. So part of the problem, it does seem, is the media's lack of blatant identification of what's news and what's opinion. Take, for example, CNN. If you watch Anderson Cooper, a news anchor, you assume fact and news, right? Not the case, really. By design, it's opinion-based journalism. That's the root of the problem.
You know, when I started as a consumer reporter in 1980, we used to have an old expression, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Susan Rose and Brian Mazurowski sitting down, talking it out with former broadcast journalist Mike Igo and host of Hardline and political contributor Kevin Hardwick. Pretty interesting stuff.
And that's still true, but the big difference now is stuff gets reposted, retweeted so much it almost becomes credible unto itself. And that's the problem. I think it's like the Pavlov's dog syndrome. If you hear it and get it pounded into you enough, it probably seems like it's credible. It probably seems like it's real. And that's the real problem.
Yeah, Kevin, what about you?
Yeah, well, I think it's a huge problem. Am I surprised? I guess a little bit. Actually, you know, they had 5 factual statements, 5 opinion statements, and 26% of their respondents, and there were about 5,000 people they talked to, 26% of them were able to nail the fact statements and say that's a factual statement, whether it was right or whether it was wrong. I mean, one of them was right off the bat, Barack Obama was born in the United States, which a lot of people, it's a knee-jerk reaction for a lot of people, including formerly, at least, the president of the United States would say, no, no way. Well, that was still a factual statement, maybe a wrong factual statement, but it was a factual statement. Then they asked 5 opinion questions. Only 35% of the people were able to get the opinion questions. The interesting thing is when you get into the crosstabs, the breakdowns, when they break it out, Republican, Democrat, and everything. And I think the key finding was that people who had high trust in the national media were able to get 39% of the statements correct, whereas people who said they have low trust, they don't believe the media, only got 18% right. I mean, I think that's the biggest difference that I, going through the survey, I found.
We're here with our roundtable talking fact versus opinion. A new Pew survey says that most people can't really tell the difference, can't correctly identify factual statements versus opinion. Mike Igo, Kevin Hardwick, joining us live in studio. Mike, you know, a lot of this to me, when I look at some of the questions being asked, I look at the results from the survey, it comes down to not so much anything about politics or the state of the news media, but instead reading comprehension from everyone who's looking at the news.
Yeah, there used to be an old book called How to Lie with Statistics, and depending on how you ask the question and so on and so on, you can put any kind of spin you want to it, you know, just like the old question, like how long have you been beating your wife, you know, crazy stuff like that. You'll get the response you want, depending on how you frame the question.
Well, I'm going to
Say, you can spin anything anyway.
Oh, sure.
Right. Well, now, you guys both teach college students. Kevin, you teach at Canisius, Mike at Fredonia. What are the college students like in your classrooms? Are they, do they seem to have any kind of trouble with this distinction here between, you know, fact and opinion?
I think many of them are like the rest of us. I think they probably do a little bit better, at least at Canisius, because we have the cream of the crop, of course. But
next to Fredonia, of
next
course.
Next to Fredonia. Fredonia is right up there. Fredonia, 1A, 1B. But yeah, they have a little trouble. And I'll tell you the bigger problem. And Mike mentions how to lie with statistics. That is a huge, huge problem. I see it in the county legislature all the time. People come in there with their facts, their set of facts, their statistics. Right. I mean, there's the old joke, three ways to lies. Lies, mm-hmm. damn lies, right. and use statistics. Right. And it's true. People come in there with their facts, and they'll say, "Well, you know, the cost to house an inmate is $30,000 a year at the county facility. And so, if you take this program and you get two inmates out of there, you'll save $60,000." Well, not really. What they're doing is they're blurring the distinction between average costs and marginal costs. And if you've taken microeconomics, you would know the difference. But just because we take one inmate out of a jail or one student out of my wife's class doesn't mean we save $30,000, or put one in, it doesn't mean it costs us $30,000. That's ridiculous. But they use these facts all the time. It's everywhere, and they influence policy. And my students need to know the difference, and that's why I teach a segment in my All College Honors course entitled "Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics." I mean, they're out there everywhere. Buffalo is the third most impoverished city in America. Well, maybe, maybe not, depending on how you look at it, what you're comparing it to, because cities like San Antonio, Texas, can annex their suburbs. You know how Buffalo could become less impoverished, get off the top 10 of the most impoverished city? They could annex Amherst. They can't do that in New York. They can do it in Texas. If you're Texas, if you're Dallas, if you're San Antonio, if you're Houston, you can annex your Amherst of the world and become not in poverty. Now, that wouldn't make any fewer people in poverty. It wouldn't make the plight of people in the inner city any better or worse, but it would change the statistic. And that sort of thing is done all the time. Every day I see it. People try to influence me as a county legislator. People try to influence our congressmen, our senators. It's there.
Kevin, you're talking about looking at statistics. I'm wondering, Mike, when you're teaching your students in journalism and communications on how to present statistics, does that ever come up with?
Well, here's what I do. I have a couple websites I kind of stress in my syllabus that they have to use. One is reverse Google images. One of my favorite pictures is during the time of the Houston floods, where Donald Trump was supposedly rescuing somebody, putting a hand out. There's a function on your Google bar there. If you go down to the camera and either drag your image in there or put the URL, you can reverse the picture and find out if it's the real deal or where it came from and do a search on that. Likewise, a couple others I use is Snopes.com, very good source of credibility. Oh, there's a lot of them. You could do a Google search. There's many, many credible websites which actually do all the work for you. But the nice thing is, I think my students are generally pretty skeptical. I don't know if it's the basis of what the teachers pounded into them or what, but I have to say the Fredonia students are a little suspicious.
Shouldn't your radar be out, and shouldn't you take almost everything with a grain of salt until you're absolutely sure?
Well, you're sure. You should. But, you know, this is just like buying a car or anything else. You believe what people tell you, and you end up with something you probably, you know, 2 days after you bought it, you say, do I really want to buy this?
And people who should know better sometimes don't. I was telling you the story yesterday. One of my colleagues, when they had the Women's March on Washington about a year ago, one of my colleagues was outraged because Mike Pence supposedly said, those women should be home cooking and cleaning for the husband, not marching out of things. And I said, hello, that's a website, The Onion. It's satire. It's not real, but she had bought into it. So.
You know, it's the same way. I mean, remember when Sarah Palin was running for vice president, most people thought she said she could see Russia from her house, which was actually Tina Fey on Saturday
right.
Night Live.
Yes, exactly right.
I mean, you know, they picked up on that. And it, you know, something, art becomes
things tend to snowball sure. as they go on. And we're talking about that with our roundtable. Mike Igo, Kevin Hardwick joining us live in studio. You know, have we as news consumers generally in this country been maybe slow to adapt? Is that why we find ourselves in this problem today? You know, Mike, it used to be you turn on CNN and that was the news. Now you turn on CNN and it's a million talking heads with a million different opinions, and they're leaning one way or another. You turn on Fox News, they're leaning one way or another. you don't get that straight news anymore, but maybe we're still expecting it?
Exactly right, because that's become the standard. The opinion journalism, which Fox has done very successfully, everyone else has copied. Monkey see, monkey do. So that's the problem. It's all become opinion journalism, not just hard news the way it's supposed to be. That's something I always teach in my classes, you know. I don't want your opinion. Says who? I write in my papers time after time. Says who with a big question mark. You got to attribute it to something. And that's not what we're not seeing in the mainstream media.
Yeah, Kevin, your thoughts on this too.
Well, I mean, we've seen a blurring of facts and opinions in the news, not just the news consumers, but the news producers. The day of Walter Cronkite being the most trusted man in America, long gone. I mean, if Uncle Walter, growing up, if Uncle Walter told you this was happening, then that was happening. Now, even not just the talking heads, not just the people who are fighting with one another, the people who are supposed to be presenting the news, oftentimes the line between a fact and opinion is blurred there, and it's disconcerting.
Whereas in the past, you didn't really have to search for your hard news. Now you kind of do. You have to dig a little bit to find something that's unbiased, that is, Mike, and, as you said, attributed
and the,
to something.
And the irony is that there's so much more available.
Right.
I mean, when Mike and I were growing up, you had three choices, right?
Right.
You had
NBC, and maybe the PBS station too.
Yeah. Well, maybe the PBS station, but you had three or four choices, and you had like half an hour of national news a day, and then you had to wait till the next day, and then you had newspapers. Now it's 24 hours. It's the internet. There's so much out there.
I was going to say,
it just contributes to the problem because it does all get blurred.
It's like an overload. You've got because of Twitter,
right,
and the internet and blogs and everything else, you have to sort through.
Yeah, anybody can be a journalist nowadays, of course, the era of the citizen journalist. But that's the problem. You know, ratings is what's driving the engine here. Because these things are having rating success, everybody's jumping on the bandwagon for opinion journalism as opposed to fact-based journalism, and that's the basic problem.
And have we not caught up to that? You know, you mentioned you only used to have those three sort. Now you have so many different places you can get the news. Do people maybe just not do enough digging to find?
And here's the other thing. It's a difference between maybe my generation and your generation, Brian. When Mike and I were growing up, if you wanted to be around the latest in technology, right, that today what today would be the iPhone or whatever, you wanted to bask in the glow of the TV, and right, you got that news every day, right, whether you wanted it or not. You wanted to be near the TV, and you heard Uncle Walter or whomever give you the news. When my kids are growing up, when you were growing up, you could avoid news entirely. You could just MTV or, you know, sports channels or whatever. You didn't have to be near that. And then you've got your video games and your iPhone. You could stay away from the news. And there are a lot of people, especially younger people, who don't know anything about government because, you know, they weren't exposed to it. Mike and I, you know, if only through osmosis, we couldn't avoid it. If the TV was on from 6:30 to 7 at night, you were getting some national news. You were finding out about the war or whatever else was going on.
Mike, maybe that's part of the problem, is if you're just all of a sudden exposed to it, say when you turn 16, 17, 18, it's a little bit of an overload.
Yeah, the lines are definitely blurred. I think reposting is another part of the problem here. A lot of people see stuff on Facebook, say, oh, that's kind of neat, I'll share with a friend, regardless of whether it's credible. They just think it's interesting, and so it goes, and then someone sees, oh, this is wow, and it kind of becomes true because it keeps going and going and going and going.
So it is indeed a double-edged sword. We in the media need to clearly identify what is what. And we, as consumers of media, well, we need to start paying attention. Carry on, everyone.
That's 9:30 in 716. We're back tomorrow with another edition from the studios of WBEN Buffalo.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.